Good morning. Welcome. It's the Ask the Pastor program on the Messenger of Good News Worldwide, KFUO. KFUO is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. I'm Roland Lettner. Thanks for joining us this morning. Happy Friday to you all. Friday's a fun day, don't you think, Pastor Roland? Pastors usually get Friday off, which makes it a fun day, right?
Yeah. I have a
that
day off.
That doesn't sound
today.
Like a very fun answer.
No, I have the day off and plan to do this and go and spend some time with my family. And
well, how can you avoid it? They're everywhere.
Well, yeah.
You've got how many kids now?
Six.
Six. Wow. What do you think about 40 years of Roe versus Wade as a father of six?
The
March for Life is today, and if many of our good friends are listening by way of stream over the app for iTunes or the Wonder Radio app, and you're participating in that march right now in Washington, D.C., our salutations and good thoughts and prayers go out to you.
Yes.
Stay warm.
Definitely.
And make your presence well known before the White House.
Yes. No, you asked me, what do I think of that? Well, it's just a horrible, sad thing. I had somebody send me something on Facebook the other day that it was the sound of abortion. Well, not really, literally, the sound of abortion, which, that kind of scared me a little bit. But it was a gentleman who had the sound of a BBs hitting a tin cup.
Hmm.
And for every BB, it was 10,000 lives. And then they talked about the wars that we've gone through. And he, says the Revolutionary War, and it was like, ta-da-da. And then it was the Civil War, and it was like, ta-da-da-da.
Right.
And then it was the World War One, and, they got a little bigger, and then they got smaller again with the Korean conflict and the Vietnam War and all that kind of stuff. And then we get to the war on the unborn. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. It was just sounded like, you're pouring BBs from, some really high place and then, thousands of BBs and everything else. And it was a very...
It gave perspective as to what 40 years of Roe has been like.
Yeah. 55 million children.
So what? Well, now, don't get me wrong, because much of our culture just shrugs that off today. That is exactly...
really does.
Remember the bumper sticker? Don't like abortion? Don't have one.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton the other day. So what's the difference?
Yeah.
You didn't want it. See, that's our attitude today as a culture. What's the... Who cares? Four dead people in Benghazi. What's it make a difference? Why?
Well, and I think that's the problem is that I don't think people have even a clue of what abortion really is. I mean, they'll say, oh, well, yeah, it's the, the ending of the life. That's all it is to them. And I would like to recommend if anybody ever gets the opportunity to go to a conference entitled Making Abortion Unthinkable. Whether it's here on the campus,
Dr.
Of Jeff
Gibbs
Seminary,
does that.
He does that.
That. You did that at your congregation.
We did that at our congregation. It really puts a lot of things into perspective, and it gets to the point where you can't even fathom how anybody would ever support this. And I truly believe there was a few years ago that I thought that we were going to get. Every candidate that was running was going to be pro-choice. And I said, well, we need to get Dr. Lamb of the Lutherans for Life to lock himself in a closet with these guys and don't let them out, show them all the information, the videos and all that kind of stuff, and don't let them out until they're pro-life.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, wouldn't it be wonderful if we ever had an election where we didn't have – where neither candidate was pro-choice, that they were both pro-life. And then we could really have a discussion on some of these other issues.
Well, I don't know that we have much to discuss.
Hope for that, right?
It seems like both sides are fairly entrenched. And Pastor Matt Roglin serves at Blessed Savior Lutheran Church in Florissant, Missouri, by way of proper introduction. We just kind of got right into it there. Because,
yeah, well, that's okay.
Well, it's a very special day. It's the March for Life, and it was the top of the AP Wire copy for the news report this morning. And, well, I just don't know. Like, I'm doing a program tomorrow, Studio A, and Jill, have you heard the name Jill Stanek?
Yes.
Does that ring a bell for you?
Mm-hmm.
Jill Stanek is the nurse who worked in Chicago that brought to light this. It's a Christian hospital that she worked at. We're on the same floor as the neonatal care unit. They were aborting children. These children were surviving these abortions, and they were being left literally in the janitor's closet to right. die without even so much as a rag wrapped around them. And that brought to light the Infant Born Alive Protection Act.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when our president was but a state senator, and the senator of Illinois. And he voted against this Infant Born Alive Protection. As I recall, the only one who voted against that particular piece of legislation that simply said, you know, if the aborting doctor doesn't want to take care of this child, if it happens to be born alive, then just bring another doctor in. And the argument was made, you know, this is a hospital. We're busy. We can't possibly do that.
Right. Yeah. I have a friend that's currently out in Washington, D.C. He's actually been on KFUO.
Tony. Yeah, Anthony Horvath. Yeah.
And he wrote on Facebook that he was within 30 yards of the president, and he says he didn't notice me, and we didn't get to exchange any conversation. And then somebody asked, you know, what would you say if you had one sentence? What would you have said? And somebody else wrote in place of Anthony, I'd like you to meet my wonderful daughter, who we chose to let live.
Yeah,
chose not to abort. And
quite a story. A daughter born with spina bifida.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of challenges there. If you follow Tony on Facebook, he chronicles some of the events, the milestones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
Well, here is an interesting article that was getting some coverage. It sort of popped up. Well, a little bit anonymously, it was in Salon.com, which is sort of left of center, you know, news website, opinion website. And the headline is, so what? Again, so what? So what if abortion ends a life? So what? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. And here is the point that Mary Elizabeth Williams makes. She makes several in the course of this article. You respond to these as I throw them out to you. First, she says, I believe that life starts at conception. Now, she's pro-choice. Now, you don't find a lot of pro-choicers making that kind of concession. She says, I believe life begins at conception, and it's never stopped me from being pro-choice.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. And then she goes on and she talks a little bit about how the pro-choice movement, and she calls, what does she call us? She calls us anti-choice. So she has a use of language also. You know, she complains about, at first, the use of language. She says, who wants to argue about being pro-life? Everybody is pro-life. So who wants to be on the side of non-life?
Well, honestly, I've never heard. You could argue that if the person was pro-choice but didn't believe that life begins at conception. She's the first person that I've ever heard of that has come out so clearly and said, well, you know, she.
Well, actually, this has been bubbling up in the background as I've been tracking this. I did a program. And I started to tell about Jill Stanek. The question that, and this is what we're getting at here with these kind of hard, calloused hearts that we're talking about. What Jill's going to talk about on the program tomorrow at 1 is, has the pro-life community been too polite? Is it time to just graphically represent what an abortion is? Because we are a culture more so now than ever based on the visuals. You know, when President Obama puts out, you know, his gun program, what does he do? Surrounds himself with kids. You know, what does he do? He goes to Sandy Hook, or, you know, he weeps. And it's all about the visuals, you know, and that's what we're going to be talking about. But listen to how hard this person is. So now she's conceded that life begins at conception. She concedes that everybody's in favor of life. Nobody's in favor of non-life. And then she goes on to say, yet I know that throughout my own pregnancies,
I never wavered for a moment in the belief that I was carrying human life inside of me. And she goes on to say, I believe that's what a fetus is, a human life. And that doesn't make me one iota less solidly pro-choice. See, and this is where we are right now. There, I've been doing stories since 2010 about the abortion industry. It says, yeah, it's a human life. I'm not even trying to hide it anymore.
Well, honestly, she's making our argument. And the thing is that I've said for a long time, I don't need a separate law to say that abortion is, you know, is illegal. All I need to do is have, all we need to have in this country is for people to admit, which she just did, that it's murder. Because we already have that on the law.
Yeah. Well, you see, there are some who would say you shouldn't even say that word. That's too harsh.
That murder?
Yeah. Call it, to call abortion murder is too harsh a language. We need to be much more couched in what we talk about.
I think the reason why we're trying to be couched is because the statistics? 1 in 4 women have had an abortion, and that doesn't change within our congregations. And so I think what you know, when a pastor, for instance, decides that he's going to, you know, be careful of the words that he says in a sermon, he's trying to be sensitive. You know, when a person comes to a pastor and says, is abortion wrong? The first question you should ask them before you answer is, why do you want to know? Because if they're coming to you and they want to argue whether it's wrong, that's one thing. If they're coming to you because they've had an abortion and they want to know if there's even a possibility of forgiveness, you have to respond a different way.
True.
And so I think that's why people are trying to be at least a little sensitive to the people that that have committed this atrocity, but might actually be, you know, they've been tortured by it since they've done this.
Well, agreed. But if we're talking to someone like Mary Elizabeth Williams, who writes this article, I think she would agree with you after having read the full piece here, that, and she might even agree with you that the word murder is okay, but, and I'll tell you why in a moment. You know, she notes that last year saw the highest number of pro-life pieces of legislation passed ever in the 40 years of Roe that kept tamping down, you know, abortion in some way, shape, or form. And she thinks the result of that, or she thinks the cause of that, not the result, the cause of that, is the fact that the choice movement is just inarticulate. They get themselves wrapped up in words of life and choice and this and that, and they talk about cells and tissue. She says that she's very proud of how Planned Parenthood has now taken a bold step of reframing the vernacular, moving away from easy terms like life and choice that are divisive. And instead, they're promoting, and they've got new ads out that they're running right now, talking about it's not a black and white issue. See, they're playing to the gray. You can't, it's not, you know, well, you know, it's squishy.
Right. I think part of the you know, the mistakes that we make on the pro-life side include, particularly in the political scene, include when we say, well, you know, abortion is murder, abortion is wrong, we need to stop abortion, and then we go and say, oh, except in the cases of rape and incest. And you know, and the problem is we just cut our argument off. Because is it not murder? Is it not ending life? Is this child not a life if it was begun in the case of rape or incest? And you know, and then we go flip on the other side and we go so over the top that we start saying words like legitimate rape, and we start saying, well, that doesn't happen very often. Well, no. We've got to be sensitive to the fact that these things do happen. However, it doesn't make it not a life. It doesn't make abortion not murder. Okay? And so I think, in those cases, you know, that's why I say she's starting to make our argument.
Yeah. Well, listen to this. This is you seem a little bit shocked at a couple of things that she's said here. And we'll go to the phones in just a moment at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. She says, "And we play into the sneaky, dirty tricks of the anti-choice lobby when we on the pro-choice side squirm so uncomfortably at the ways in which they've repeatedly appropriated the concept of life." So she doesn't think we're entitled to have an exclusive claim on what being pro-life is. "Here's the complicated reality in which we live," she states with all Margaret Sangerite vim and vigor. "All life is not equal."
That's where she's going. She's saying all it's life. It's life. It's just not. It's not equal.
Mm-hmm. And Margaret Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood, eugenics movement, head of the progressives back in the early 20th century. This is exactly what she thought, too.
You know, yeah, it is.
Blacks, Chinese, Slavs, not exactly the same kind of life as...
Well, this is one of the things.
And if you think I'm making that up, read some
history. No.
There's folks shaking their head right now going, "That can't possibly be true."
Well, you know, sadly, all you have to do is look it up on the internet or if you don't trust the internet, there's plenty of other sources that you can find out. Margaret Sanger, the reason why the Planned Parenthood is in the inner city is because she wanted to eradicate this world of non-whites. So, you know,
well, no, she wasn't really happy with a lot of the whites either, like the Slavs and the steppe peoples.
But people different than her.
Right.
Let's just say it that way.
Yes.
I mean, she was the most racist person, and Planned Parenthood is based on that.
Exactly.
Now,
yeah.
You know, and
comes right out of Darwin. And if now this will be a shocker, and I can't scream this loud enough from the rooftops, but the historical evidence exists. There's an excellent book out there called Hitler's Ethic, written by Dr. Richard Weikert, who I believe teaches at Stanislaus University out in California. And he examines the eugenics movement, and he examines what happened during World War II, and he sort of asks a very simple question. From where did the Germans get these ideas? And you know what the answer is? Margaret Sanger.
Yeah.
There's a dirty little secret for you.
Yeah.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. That book is available, by the way, at Amazon.com. I encourage it highly for your reading. Larry, good morning.
Now, if we could just eradicate Christians.
Well, you know, the lions in Africa are starving, from what I hear.
Right. I think that's the real motive of our government, to eradicate Christians. The church is in its way to further its agenda. Yep. Real quick, Roland, and this, I know this is not what Jenny had up there, but in the Bible study today,
yeah,
the amazement of Mary and Joseph, the same writer in Acts chapter 2, when the Holy Spirit came and they spoke in tongues, the same sort of amazement. There's a great parallel there.
Yeah, astonishing. They were astonished is a word that the ESV uses.
Right. On this topic, you can look at two things. Look at her comment yesterday. It was repulsive. What does it matter? But it didn't fit the agenda. See, because the agenda in Newtown's totally different. You can see the white and the gray, can't you? White and the black. In Newtown, we can further a gun agenda, right? But in Benghazi, it was just, what does it matter? It was just four lives. It is so sad. But there was a great moment last night on ESPN. I don't know if you ever watch ESPN. Do you watch ESPN, either one of you?
Oh, no. I'm always about high scholarly things, Larry.
Oh, okay.
I never watch television.
Well, then let
note the sarcasm in his...
It's not quite so scholarly. It was a wonderful story. Yeah. A high school kid with Down syndrome played in a basketball game and scored 4 points. And I mean, the place went nuts. And it was just so wonderful to see that, you know what? Here's a kid that wasn't, like you talked earlier about your daughter, Roland,
yeah,
that wasn't put to death, that wasn't given the death sentence. So, You know, it's, to me, it's about agenda and money. It always comes down to that. That's how the devil operates, his agenda and the love of money. So those are my comments, and you guys have a good weekend.
You as well, Larry.
You
thank
too.
You. 90%, if they're being honest, it might even be higher. But once diagnosed as Down syndrome, whether that diagnosis is accurate or not, and that's part of the story my wife and I often talk about, is how my youngest was misdiagnosed as being Down syndrome. 90% plus aborted. You don't really see a lot of Down syndrome adults around, let alone Down syndrome children anywhere. But here's another story. This Larry, if you're listening, also goes to that point. Waiter who refused service to a man who allegedly insulted 5-year-old with Down syndrome speaks out. And this is a waiter in a restaurant who overheard some of his customers complaining about this Down syndrome child. They just didn't want to be exposed to this Down syndrome child. They were saying essentially that the child should have been put sort of in the back corner of the restaurant. He refused to serve them.
Good for him.
He refused to serve them. And now here's the shocker in this world. His employer, the restaurant,
fired him.
No.
No?
Supported him.
Good. Good. Well, you know, actually, when I
Michael
kind
Garcia,
of had a
name.
Little bit of a surprise there, but I now that I think about it, even if the employer would have agreed with the customer, if he's got any kind of sense of service towards people and how bad it would have looked,
mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, I probably shouldn't be as surprised. I mean, that's giving the worst possible
yeah.
scenario there. But I mean, it would have looked really bad on that restaurant.
I mean, how callous do you have to be that vulgar to a family with a Down syndrome child?
You know,
how self-privileged, self-entitled do you have to believe yourself to be that you couldn't deign to share the same restaurant with someone who was different and challenged?
Yeah, I just, you know, it blows my mind when somebody acts that way.
When someone is so offended that you would dare to keep that life when everybody else with good sense would say, chuck it in the bin, be done with it, don't expose it to culture.
Right.
Yeah, how callous have we become? How do you preach in a world like that, Pastor? Good luck getting up on Sunday morning because, brother, let me tell you, that's the world in which your church exists.
Well, I know it is, and that's the thing. That's the challenge for the pastor, and the challenge is to meet all those kinds of beliefs and understandings. And believe me, you know, the voices are much louder than we are, and they're much more in common. There's many more voices speaking against the Word of God than there are that are speaking for the Word of God. And so it really is a challenge, but you also have to, again, couch it knowing that, you know, we may have some people that are tormented by their sin and need to hear the forgiveness as well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whenever it comes down to, you know, Life Sunday and texts that have to do with those kinds of things, it does come to a challenge. Right now, thankfully, we don't have what some countries do, which is if you speak and say certain things are a sin, you could be put in jail. And I say right now, I would not be surprised if in my lifetime that changes.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's Ask the Pastor. Pastor Matt Rogland is here from Blessed Savior Lutheran Church in Florissant, Missouri. And just to make sure I get this out there, the waiter's name was Michael Garcia. He worked at a restaurant called Lorenzo's, though sadly I do not have a reference to where this restaurant is in the story that I have. You may know this. You may have heard it somewhere before, but listen to this. This is about Milo. It's about educating ourselves about when people are different. He said that this child, he says, was a gift from God, an angel, a special needs child that should be admired. Check that out. We'll be right back. Stick around. Welcome back to Ask the Pastor on the Messenger of Good News Worldwide, KFUO. Happy Friday. Pastor Matt Roglin is here from Blessed Savior Lutheran Church in Florissant, Missouri, which everybody outside of St. Louis refers to as Florissant.
Florissant,
Missouri. My wife grew up there.
It's very illuminating.
Yeah. Let me finish with this article from Mary Elizabeth Williams. And by the way, that restaurant that we were talking about where the waiter, Michael Garcia, was very kind to the family of the Down syndrome child, it was Lorenzo's, and it's a Houston, Texas area restaurant. Now, we had talked about how this woman had conceded that life begins at conception, that what's growing inside her womb is a human life. And then we got to sort of the punchline of the article, the ironic punchline is, here's the complicated reality, she says, in which we live, all life is not equal. Then she goes on to say, yet a fetus can be a human life without having the same rights as the woman in whose body it resides. She is the boss. Her life and what is right for her circumstances and her health should automatically trump the right of the non-autonomous entity inside of her. Always. Period.
Wow. Well, how far do you take that then? I mean, that argument basically supports,
Again, read the book, Dr. Richard Weikart, Hitler's Ethic. Does this not sound like the history class you took in high school?
It goes all the way through those kinds of things. It goes all the way to the people that say, we should be able to abort a child all the way up to the age of 2 years old.
Yeah.
By the way, that's not so, that's not like in some other country. That's like people that are in our administration, current administration, I don't think President Obama's ever said that, but somebody in his administration did. If people are not getting shocked anymore and are willing to come out and say this, well, it is life. It is a human life, but it's not, equal. Well, of course, a one-year-old is not really autonomous either.
No. No. Give them $1 and send them to the grocery store, see what they come back with.
Exactly.
Yeah, they can't support them. Yeah.
They cannot live outside of the mother's womb either.
Autonomously.
Right? Autonomously.
And really, even at three, even at five, it's a bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
Now, here she goes on. She says, the majority of women, I have to couch a little bit of the language here because she uses a few vulgarities that I don't think are suitable for the air, but it says, she says, the majority of women who have abortions, and one in three American women will. Now, you said one in four, one in three. You can see the numbers they get played with. Are already mothers. So, you see, it's not, 17-year-old girls who, have inappropriate behavior at the prom. We're talking about mothers. Mothers have abortions. Don't you know that, Pastor?
They just didn't want to have another one.
Right.
What she said.
Yeah. And I can say anecdotally that I'm a mom who loved the lives she incubated from the moment she found out she was pregnant, vulgarity was in there, and is also now well over 40 and in an experimental drug trial. Doesn't say for what, but she says, if by some random fluke I learned today I was pregnant, you bet your backside, I'm inserting that there, I'd have an abortion. I'd have the world's greatest abortion.
I'm not sure what that means.
What that means is...
the world's greatest abortion?
Say it loud and say it proud. I'd kill my child. I'd have an abortion. She wouldn't just have an abortion. She is so pro-choice that if she found out she were pregnant today, she wouldn't just have an abortion. She'd have a super abortion.
Part of me says,
this is the vulgarity.
The majority of this country still wouldn't be able to accept that kind of a point of view. And maybe she's trying to say, ready. This is where we are now.
She says, let's just be brutally honest. Let's just be brutally honest. Let's not play with vocabulary. Let's not play with euphemisms. That's sort of the question I ask tomorrow.
Two glasses half full kind of person or whatever. But I tend to believe that if you let that out in the mainstream, I think
this is Salon.com. This is mainstream.
Yeah, well,
I've never
read Salon.com.
Well, I know, but let me tell you, the folks who show up at MSNBC and CNN and those places who are the folks invited to quote themselves in their articles on television, Salon.com is a pretty big deal.
Okay.
It is. Let's go to the phones, talk to David. David, good morning.
Hi, Roland, Pastor. I'm afraid America's lost its conscience. If you can say that we put back a man in office who, as a senator, voted for infanticide, a baby that survived an abortion is left to die there. And I came in kind of late on the show, so I don't know if you guys really talked about this shit. But if America can put this man back in office, something's wrong with our conscience. And I look at people who say these types of things about killing children. How are we any different than Nazis?
Well, listen to how she finishes this article from Salon.com. Again, if you want to find it, Salon.com, Mary Elizabeth Williams, the headline, "So What If Abortion Ends a Life?" And it says, last sentence, "And I would put the life of a mother over the life of a fetus every single time, even if I still need to acknowledge my conviction that the fetus is indeed a life worth sacrificing."
Yeah, and Roland, I just reiterate this. How is America any different than Nazis? And how it's frustrating. And how many so-called Christians, people that call themselves Christians, voted for this man? And it's not just him either, but the Democratic Party. How many so-called Christian and churches?
Let's be fair here. Not to couch this in any way, shape, or form. That seems to be our favorite word today, couch. I don't know why. Maggie, go home and move the couch, maybe.
I think he wants to go lie down.
But, there are Democrats for Life. It's an organization that's out there. And, the problem is that, people, sadly, for the wrong reasons, don't make this a priority. People just sort of assume that abortion's always going to be there. We can't do anything about it. They're more focused on other issues. Now, I'm not saying that's right, and I'm not saying it's an excuse. I'm just saying that's how people think. Well, David seems to have disappeared on us. I know David has a limited-use phone. But I don't want to blanket this as just, someone who, voted. There are people out there who voted for President Obama who probably did it for very legitimate reasons.
Well, and I think there are people that voted for him and didn't really know his stance on...
No. And this is the thing that I marvel at, because the opportunity is this. I think we're all convicted of the fact that the president may be fairly resolute and fairly firm in his support of abortion rights. But, even the hardest heart of stone can get cracked. And can you imagine what would happen if this man came to a right understanding of the scriptures and what life actually is?
Well, I don't think we can put the entire enormity of the sin of abortion at the feet of our current president. There's a lot of people.
Well, no, it's just
that are part of it too.
It's just a great irony in Sanger felt about African Americans and how we have our first African American president who supports this industry. And I've had. There are a couple of organizations. I wish I could remember the name. Forgive me that I don't. Was an African-American woman, pro-choice, pro-life woman, runs a pro-life organization, put up billboards in New York City that became very controversial because the billboard said, "The most dangerous place for a black child in America is the womb."
Yeah.
Yeah. And you just can't dismiss that. There is that component to it, and it's very sad. Let's go back to the phones, bring someone else on. Nancy, you're up next. Good morning, Nancy.
Hi, Roland. How are you?
I am well. Thanks for the call this morning.
Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning.
I tell you, this abortion deal really, really upsets me. My daughter's like 42 now, but I had very difficult time carrying children. I lost one before, one after, and come to find out, my daughter's whole insides are reversed, and she was sick a lot and all that. She's grown, she's healthy, has four children. But I wonder if at that time when I had her, if you would have been able to go and see what was wrong, if the doctor would have suggested to me, do I abort this baby? Because, by golly, her insides are all screwed up and everything else. And she is the joy of my life. I was never able to have a more. And I tell you, she is. Now, we had some trying times, as you know how children are. But, you know, most women have a choice. You know, there's something called birth control. I got married 49 years ago, and birth control pills were out then. And I think people need to be much more responsible for themselves. There is no excuse to abort a baby. If you don't want it, carry it, put it up for adoption. You are not God. You do not have that choice to go in and murder a child. And now talking up to 2 years old, now I realize the age of two is a really difficult age with children. It's no, 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 I'm going to do it my way. But I think our country is, well, I didn't vote for the president. Trust me, I did not vote for this man. And, you know, what gives them the right to just say, oh, well, it's nothing. We'll just get rid of it. Yes, we do sound like the Nazis. So it's time for America to take stock of themselves and look, really look deep inside of them and say, where are we headed for? And as far as I'm concerned, it's downhill all the way. And I worry for my grandchildren. And how can you, with all good faith, go in and just get rid of this child?
Pastor, you jump. Nancy, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Pastor. You jump in here. Where did that come from? Was that you?
I don't know. That's really strange.
Was that the sound of epiphany?
That wasn't my...
when the wise men walked up on the manger?
No, I agree with Nancy that
there is a cultural conscience that we have to talk about.
And the direction that this country is going is not necessarily a good one in many ways. And abortion is just one of the...
is abortion a symptom or a cause?
I'm going to give you the answer that you radio guys don't like from us pastors.
Why do you ask?
Yes.
It is both. It is both.
I really think it is, because I think there's a lack of understanding of the sanctity and the preciousness of life. There's a desire to, be the ruler and controller of our own life. And so therefore abortion is just a symptom, but there's also, the more we do things like abortion and whatever, the more we go down that road of being callous and not really caring. It just is so shocking, the disconnect when we can be, rightfully so, very upset about things such as what happened in Newtown. But then, the fact that 3,000 children are aborted a day,
but the difference,
doesn't matter.
The difference is, not saying it's right, but I'm saying what people have soothed themselves with is that those 20 children were wanted.
Well, yeah.
They were wanted, and they were loved, and that's what gave them value, and that's what made them precious.
We have come to a point where life doesn't begin for the majority of the people in our – well, not majority, but the pro-choice movement, the people that believe in this, life doesn't begin at conception.
Doesn't even except begin
for,
at birth
except for that, yeah. that person. Life doesn't begin at birth. Life begins at choice.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Because, you know, because of the fact that we have such stupidity, I mean, there's nothing else you can say about it, in the fact that you can charge, and I think this is good, you can charge a person with two murders if you kill a pregnant woman, or you can even, or if you punch the woman in the stomach, you can at least be, and the baby is killed because the woman wanted that child, it's a life and it's murder. But because she didn't,
That's where we have to resolve just what this is.
It just makes no sense at all.
Right. Let's go back to the phones. James has been waiting. James, good morning.
Good morning, Brother Roland. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning.
Yes, I think it's a sad commentary on a Christian and culture when we have to have two pro-life candidates to move on to addressing other issues in the culture. And I think it's the false equivalency versus an evident truth. It seems that it's a false equivalency to present gun violence up against abortion, because isn't it an evident truth that gun violence is an epidemic in our urban cities across America? And so I guess my question to you, Pastor, is, so if that's an evident truth and that's false equivalency versus the evident truth of placing gun violence against abortion, is it not Hitler's ethic for the gun lobby and supporters to be passive or active participants in propagating this gun violence in inner cities?
Hang on, James, because you're going to have to do a little bit of demonstration of facts here.
Okay.
You have to show me, and again, you're euphemistically referring to it as the gun lobby. I don't know who that is that you're referring to. But how, what evidence do you have that the gun lobby, as you call them, propagates violence in the inner city?
Passively through their legislation and upholding the sale of guns, the way that they do, and the type of guns that they sell, I would say. Actively, by that same lobby, I guess you would say, because in my community, there is an epidemic of gun violence, and the guns don't come from where I'm from. They come from outside. And so when we were talking about Hitler's ethic, I would just like to ask the pastor, is my logic, you know, is it skewed or not, to think that it's also Hitler's ethic to have gun lobbies and gun supporters passively or actively participating and propagating that kind of violence in the inner city?
But again, I'm going to let Pastor get in on this, James, but I really think I'm having a hard time understanding the connection, because I have never seen a truck labeled gun lobby pull into a minority neighborhood and start offloading guns anywhere.
But well, I won't.
You know, and I don't mean to be absurd about this, but
no,
I think it's a bit of a stretcher, because if they come from the outside of the community, they're coming from somewhere. Someone's going out and buying them and bringing them in, and that's an individual criminal act, and that's not the people that you would refer to as the gun lobby.
Well, I don't think they all come in. That is true, that criminals probably use the guns to do wrong things, but the actual sale of guns at Walmarts or wherever they sell them, or at the gun shows, and the right to do that makes those guns available to that element.
But the same
and
right.
Particular background checks, and there's going to be a discussion about that in the culture coming up.
Well, it has to be an honest discussion, though, because I defy anyone within the sound of my voice, mm-hmm. especially in the St. Louis metro area, to either go to a gun show or to go to a pawn shop or to go to a sporting goods store or to go to Walmart and purchase any kind of a firearm without a background check. It is not possible. I know from experience.
Okay. And so do you think that it is
And let me point out to you, James, and forgive me for interrupting you, but let me point out to you.
Sure.
That hasn't abated the gun violence in St. Louis.
No, it hasn't. And so if we do have this epidemic of gun violence, do we blame the victims? Do we say that because those criminals or because those, you don't blame the victims when you say a woman has an abortion. You don't blame her as a victim, but for doing it, you are you going to take that same kind of false equivalency and say, well, the gun violence is perpetrated upon themselves, so they're the victims and they're the blame? I'm just trying to kind of see because, you know, it's...
The victims in an abortion are not necessarily... I can see how one could possibly say a woman is victimized by maybe a rape or something like that, and that's how she got pregnant. But in the actual act of abortion, the victim is the child.
That is true, I'm not stating against that. What I'm saying is that the victim is not only the child. It's the woman. It's the woman's family. And if we have this false equivalency where we forget about the evident truth of gun violence, and to think that the only way that we can move on to addressing other important issues in our culture is to first address this single issue, and to only apply Hitler's ethic to that single issue and not to the gun lobby and their supporters and how they actively and passively propagate gun violence in the inner cities.
Well, the first thing we have to do, James, is have an honest, forthright discussion about that, because there are a lot of presuppositions that are brought to, you know, I mean, for example, the term you use, gun lobby.
Yes,
I defy you to identify who the gun lobby is. Is the gun lobby the farmer? Is the gun lobby the estranged wife whose husband is threatening her, who buys a weapon to protect herself and her children from threats of violence?
They have an acronym, and they lobby on Capitol Hill, and I didn't want to say that because I have many friends that are members of that.
Well, yeah, I understand,
but that's
a real broad brush is all I'm saying. That's why we have to have a little bit more of an honest discussion, because I don't think you'll find that a lot of the folks that you're referring to as being in the lobby are the ones that are advocating any violence in the inner city of any type.
Or outside the inner city.
Saying it's the presuppositions that we have to be careful about, because we can't just assume that because somebody says you have the right to own a gun or any type of gun, that by that same stretch of logic, they are advancing the idea of killing people.
That's true, and that's why I use the terms active and passive participant.
Sometimes
my right to do some things propagates other unintended consequences of that right. And that's why I said passive and active participation.
Right, but be careful, because those same rights that we're dealing with when it comes to whether or not and what type of gun and who has the right to limit that type of weapon are the same foundations for why you can't say certain things in the public square about Christ. And who gets the right to limit that? And the thing is, you can't forsake one right for the sake of another. They're all there, whether you like them or not. And when you start to degrade one, then the next thing you know, they're kicking in Matt Rogland's door, telling him that he can't preach on homosexuality on Sunday, and if he does, he's going to jail.
Okay, well, let's rein my diatribe in and be an ass pastor, because
we've got 30 seconds here, Pastor.
We've passed it. Yeah. I'd like to know, isn't it a sad commentary on Christians and culture if they have to have two pro-life candidates to move on?
All right, we've got it, James.
I did make that statement that I would look forward to a time when we would have two pro-life candidates so that we could actually argue about some of the other issues that are facing us. But to me, when it comes down to it, I could agree with a person 99 out of 100 issues, but I could not vote for them if, for instance, they were going to pick up where Hitler left off, or in a more timely way, if they propagate abortion on demand.
And credit to James for raising the issue about being single issue. You know, it's a package deal living in this life.
It really is.
Theology is life. Pastor Matt Roblin, all the best to the good folks there at Blessed Savior in Florissant. Take care, my friend. Good seeing you again.
Yeah, God bless.
Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday, guys. Bye-bye.
Listen to the Bible Study Monday through Friday at this same time. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for the Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is heard weekdays on KFUO Radio, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.